The drive home belongs to the great one. Mark Levin, today at 3 on Talk Radio 570 KVI.
There is one scenario Washington really does not want to see played out in Ukraine. It is the old Cold War one of Russian forces on somebody else's territory. National Security Advisor Susan Rice.
It's in nobody's interest to see violence return and the situation escalate.
Nor have Ukraine split into two, a west link to Europe and an east back in the orbit of Russia.
That would be a grave mistake. It's not in the interest of Ukraine or of Russia or of Europe or the United States to see the country split.
And we are back. John Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Again, a week ago, demonstrations in the streets, riots in Ukraine, and a nation of 46 million people, a nation that is trying to break free, go its own way. Well, at least part of it wants to do that. And then you have the president, within a week's time, agreeing to snap elections this spring, and now he's fled the country. He's lost his bodyguards. Let's see if we can find him. He's rumored to be in the Crimean region. Ralph Peters, Fox News military analyst, retired lieutenant colonel, author of the great Civil War novel Hell or Richmond. Boy, of all the times I've had you on the show, today more than ever. Make sense of what is happening in Ukraine and where we're headed or what direction they're headed.
Well, first of all, let's key on Susan Rice's statement, you know, her going out of her way, really, to make a point that Russian military intervention is a bad idea. As a former intelligence officer, that tells me our intelligence community has picked up Russian forces going to a higher state of alert on Ukraine's borders. Now, that doesn't mean the Russians are ready to invade, but it certainly means Putin's getting ready and looking at all his options. The West can say all at once that Ukraine shouldn't be divided, et cetera, because we're obsessed with keeping all borders intact. It's as if every border in the world dates back to the Book of Genesis or the Paleolithic era. And it's just not so. Borders always change. Stalin finalized Ukraine's current borders, and he kept a lot of Russian speakers in the Don Basin around Donetsk and also Russian settlers in the Crimea inside Ukraine to keep a Russian influence in Ukraine. Now, to me, unfortunately, there's no way to do this neatly and peacefully, but the western 60-65% of Ukraine is part of Europe. It's Ukrainian-speaking. It's civilized. The eastern third or so of Ukraine, including the Crimea and the southeast, the Don Basin and around Donetsk, it's an industrial wasteland. It's Russian-speaking. The people seem pretty happy with Soviet-style squalor and Russian barbarism, and I don't see why Ukraine would really want to hold on to them. There's some value in the mines and industry, but it's really obsolete, and it's really a mess. Now, the trouble is, there's no peaceful way to make a breakup happen. Now, the West also assumes that Putin would see some sense in holding Ukraine together. And there's the real problem. Because while Putin wanted to gobble the whole pie of Ukraine, if he really senses he can't get that whole pie, he'll try to grab about half the pie.
He'll take what he can get.
Yeah, and he would try to grab as much of the pie as he could, not just a third, but a half of it. And so my bottom line for your listeners right now, we don't know what's going to happen because there are so many moving parts in Ukraine, in Russia, the EU, the West. But keep an open mind because this is not finished.
Well, I think it's really just starting. I mean, you've got the president who's now fled. Apparently, you've got the former prime minister who was in jail for a couple of years, Yulia Tymoshenko?
Tymoshenko. Yeah, usually, even though it's an O in the end, Ukrainians, unlike Russians, usually don't pronounce it as an O. It's more of a Yevtushenko.
Okay, tell me about her. Is she a Margaret Thatcher? Is she a Benazir Bhutto? Where do you put her?
Well, much closer to Benazir Bhutto, but she is much more oriented on the West. Even though she got along reasonably well with Putin, She is a Ukrainian nationalist, Western-oriented, strictly for independence, did not want Ukraine to become part of any new Russian federations. The trouble with Yulia Tymoshenko is she's yesterday's person. She's damaged goods for a lot of Ukrainians. The Ukrainians who are out protesting the street, by and large, even though they respect her, and they, you know, especially because she was put in prison on trumped-up political charges, nonetheless, they really want somebody new. The young people do. Now, she has said she won't be prime minister, but that doesn't mean she won't run for president. So the real danger now politically is if Russia doesn't forcefully intervene, the next hurdle is these May presidential elections, and if the opposition splits, as it has in the past, and fields multiple candidates and nobody gets a majority, you have a chance for a comeback of the pro-Russian side. And I hope the opposition, now that they've made so much progress toward freedom and integration with Europe, that they can unite behind one candidate. And I kind of hope it's not Tymoshenko. It may be. We will see. It's really tough.
Well, there's that pro-boxer, Vitaly Klitschko.
Klitschko. He does say, oh. It's
okay.
Really, the
you know what? I've always said Klitschko, and I said, I'm going to impress Ralph Peters by saying
well,
Klitschko.
You kind of get away with just saying Klitschko.
Okay.
Vitaly Klitschko.
It is Klitschko. Okay. But, you know, he runs a political party that supposedly is very popular with young people.
Yeah, it is. Udar, which means the blow. We translate it as the punch, but it's Udar is a blow, like a hammer blow.
Okay.
And yeah, and they're definitely pro-Western, pro-democracy, good. But and again, we'll see, you know, who winds up being the nominee. But I think a lot of people have trouble seeing Klitschko, even though he's an upstanding moral freedom fighter. He certainly doesn't have government experience. I mean, it would be a real challenge for him to be president. Of course, no. Václav Havel brought it off in the former Czechoslovakia,
playwright.
The Czech Republic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so it's not without precedent, but it would be a tall order. And again, I'm not going to pretend I have inside knowledge I don't have, because the Ukrainians are going to—they're still arguing this out. They're still shocked that Yevtushenko's gone. Pleasantly shocked, of course. There's now an arrest warrant out for the guy. He's apparently in Crimea, mm-hmm. which has a heavy Russian-speaking population. Even with Ukrainian independence, the Russians maintained a huge naval base on the Black Sea at Sevastopol. And so that's where I would see, if Putin wants to stir things up, we will see more pro-Russian demonstrations in Crimea, in the east around Donetsk, and...
All right, two important questions, Ralph.
Yeah.
The first is, if Russia did send in military force to, quote, stabilize Ukraine, in other words, bring them back, would this be a return to the old Brezhnev doctrine that we are not going to allow a country within our sphere of influence fall outside that influence? We'll use military force if necessary to keep them here.
Well, yeah, you could call it a return to the Brezhnev doctrine. I'd see it more as a Putin doctrine to reestablish the empire of the czars, really. The Empire of the Tsars with a, you know, with some Soviet spices thrown in.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that people are... I mean, there's so much that people in the mainstream media seem to be missing on this. First of all, the Ukraine crisis ties our hands on Syria. Because if... We can't launch punitive airstrikes against Assad now, because if we did, Putin would use that as a shield, as cover, and an excuse to send troops into at least eastern Ukraine, if not Ukraine as a whole. And that's the pattern. That's the real pattern. And remember, when the Soviets sent tanks into Budapest in Hungary in 1956, they did it under cover of the Suez Crisis. Prague, 68.
That's right.
The U.S. was involved in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And so what Putin would like would be an excuse that allows him to claim moral equivalency. So, again, this is... It's not just Ukraine. It's Ukraine, it's Russia, it's Syria, it's the greater Middle East, it's East-West relations. And unfortunately, even though the White House and Obama may not want a new Cold War, Putin's perfectly comfortable with it. And oh, by the way, Putin is absolutely 100% certain that no matter what he does, Obama will not retaliate.
Well, I was going to say, so after you and I are done talking, your phone rings, you pick it up, it's President Obama. Ralph, listen, what do I do with Ukraine? What's my next step?
Well, you make it clear that you support Ukraine's independence and democracy 100%, that you want to support them with international election monitors, and not from China or North Korea, thank you, to make sure it's fair. Because Yanukovych cheated on the last election.
Elections monitors from North Korea.
Yeah. And then the other thing you want to do is make it, you know, you have to have a come-to-Jesus meeting with Putin and make it clear to him that if he does anything, there will be serious consequences, including not just denial of visas, but an economic boycott of Russia. Now, why is that hard for Obama to do? Because of his wrong-headed, stupid surge in Afghanistan, which failed so miserably, we rely on supply routes through Russia and Russian clients in Central Asia to get our aid, our supplies in and out of Afghanistan. And as we're drawing down, we're using that route. So, you know, we've got one route through Russia and Central Asia, another through Pakistan, which is hardly our friend. And this is an administration that stumbles and bumbles drunkenly forward, making one mistake after another, and not seeing how the world ties together. And again, this, you know, what's happening in Ukraine ties into Syria, ties into Afghanistan. It's, you've got to take this holistic, integrated approach to strategy, or else you wind up doing something really stupid in country A that results in a real mess in country X.
Can I play a real quick clip from Susan Rice yesterday on Meet the Press?
Sure.
And get your response to it? This is National Security Advisor Susan Rice being asked by David Gregory why we, the United States, shouldn't regard Russia as an enemy.
They see Russia talking about the U.S. meddling in its area, giving political asylum to Edward Snowden, blocking the United States when it comes to interests in Syria. Why shouldn't Americans look at Vladimir Putin and Russia today as an enemy?
David, first of all, we have to be very pragmatic, and President Obama has been exceedingly pragmatic about our dealings with Russia. There are areas where we can cooperate with them. There are areas where we disagree bitterly with them. But let's look at both sides of the ledger. We have been able to reach a new and very important arms control agreement with them, the New START Treaty. We've been able to cooperate on Afghanistan and Russia's role in enabling us to move our equipment and personnel in and out of Afghanistan has been very important. On Iran, we've actually been working together on the effort to use diplomacy to see if we can't obtain a nuclear agreement. They've been cooperative in that. On the other hand, we differ bitterly over issues of human rights. We differ over Syria. We differ over their treatment of LGBT persons. And we differ over a number of issues.
What do you think, Ralph Peters?
Well, I think Obama has not been pragmatic. He hasn't really stood up to Russia, to Putin, on anything. And, you know, I think it's, you know, it's fine to stand up for one little issue like LGBT rights. But let's face it, in the great scheme of things, the fate of Ukraine, of Syria, of the future of Eurasia is more important than one little issue that Obama is pursuing strictly to please his extreme base.
This whole Russian reset policy. What a disaster that has been.
Total failure. 100% failure. Did not succeed in a single thing. Even the START agreement, the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty we got, Obama celebrated giving away important dual-use weapons while Russia gave up junk it was getting rid of anyway, rusty old crap it couldn't afford to fix. I mean, we have Obama's foreign policy is without precedent in its absolute folly and disastrous consequences.
Ralph Peters, always great having you here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Thanks very much for the time. Appreciate it, Ralph.
My pleasure.
You got it. That's Ralph Peters, Fox News military analyst, author of that great book, Hell or Richmond. You're listening to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. When, in about 15 minutes after your headlines, I'm going to ask a provocative question. Think about this. Would it bother you to know that people you're working with are armed during the workday at the office or the worksite? Would it bother you to know that the people you're working with are armed? It's a provocative issue that's come up here. We're going to tackle it in about 15 minutes here on The Commute with Carlson.